Ian Oland, what was the worst hangover of your life?
Oh, no. I've actually never had a hangover.
Jesus, man. Like, I don't drink anymore, but I've had hangovers. You've never had a hangover?
I don't think I've ever had a hangover, no.
All right. Have you ever been to, like, a pool party in, like, eighth grade and you had, like, 14 Pepsis and the next day you couldn't move?
Yes. Not a pool party, but I've had too many sodas. Yeah.
Okay. That's, I mean, I was really hoping for like a bit. I was really hoping that you'd sort of pad open the podcast intro. Thought you're going to have a story about Ocean City and secrets. I know you're not a drinker. I'm not a drinker anymore either, but
I didn't even go on senior week. A few of my friends invited me to Ocean City and I was like, I don't know. Ocean City sucks. I think I'm just going to work the entire week. I don't know. That's
that is
who I
the
am.
Saddest thing.
I am sad. Yeah, I don't know. There's something wrong with me. As you said in Slack, I was born to blog, and that's it.
I deferred starting the job that I am still basically at for a week because I wanted to go to senior week.
That's awesome.
Except I didn't have. I guess this is before I had like a ATM card or a credit card or anything like that. So I had like $44. To take with me to the beach, and I like bought like a Dumpster's milkshake and like a thing of pudding, and I was like, that's it. And so I ran out of money, and I just caught a ride home with my friend whose car broke down on the Bay Bridge. We had to push it off of the bridge and then walk up to a gas station so that her parents could come pick us up, and I got slapped in the face by a local who was trying to incite a fight, but I did not go for the fight. That's my story.
I remember that when we first started getting close, I remember you would talk about picklebacks a lot, and I was really confused.
Yeah, I'm glad that that time of my life is in the past. to the uninitiated, a pickleback is any shot followed by pickle juice. Usually it's whiskey or some kind of brown liquor, usually not good brown liquor. But yeah, you throw some pickle juice afterwards. And I prefer to do it with one of the two appropriate theme songs to the pickleback. One of them being the Nickelback song Photograph, but you say, look at this pickleback.
Oh my God.
And then the other one being Justin Timberlake Sexy Back. But then in that one, you say, I'm bringing pickleback to the bridge. So.
I'm so glad I brought this up.
I think that's about as much levity as we can afford because it's time to talk about the Caps and their 5-game losing streak. You ready to do this?
Oh, no.
Okay.
And now, it's time for the RFNB Podcast.
All right, the Washington Capitals have dropped 5 games in a row, dating back to like January 12 or something like that, with the loss on Sunday to the Chicago Blackhawks, who were legit the 31st ranked team in the NHL. A weird game that ended 8-5, and the only people that seemed to score for the Washington Capitals were defensemen. The Capitals had their first players-only meeting of the season of the Todd Reardon administration. I can't remember the last time they had a players-only meeting. Ian, what do you think they talked about?
Can I counter your question with a question?
Please.
Is it time to put Voldemort up on our site?
No. No. Okay. This is another thing where you ask a question and like 80% of our listeners weren't there for the original Voldemort thing. So for the uninitiated again, Voldemort or Going Dark is when Russian Machine dealt with like a losing streak. I think it was in 2010. In like maybe December 2010 when like Bruce Boudreaux's Capitals just like lost, I think 8 games in a row.
Yeah.
And everything was horrible and HBO was filming it for the Road to the Winter Classic series. And we're like, oh, they're never going to win again. And like, I think maybe New York blew them out one time and we started the panic protocol where we refused to use capital letters and we changed the website's design to be all dark. And we put a picture of like, Voldemort from Harry Potter up there to say, oh God, everything's, you know, horrible. As a joke, because it wasn't horrible, we knew the team was really good. They were just having a struggly time, which is kind of similar to where they are now. I mean, yeah, the team's different dynamically.
I remember you explained it like it was when Spider-Man had the black suit.
Oh, yeah. So the black suit was like originally it was like I read a book about it by a guy named Sean Howe and the Marvel thing, but like the black suit is this interesting story where like somebody on like spec was like, what if Spider-Man had a black suit? Look at this design. And it's like a kid from like Nebraska sends a photo and they're like, what about this? And they're like, that's awesome. And they waited a couple years and then they made it like a, they partnered with like Hasbro or some toy company to sell figures, and they created a, with like market out, like research, they decided that kids want toys that are based on Marvel superheroes with two words in it. And those two words are secret and war. So they started a series called Secret War. And in that series, Spider-Man finds a black alien suit. And it was kind of fun for like a minute. And then all of a sudden they found out it was an alien suit that was like kind of turning Peter Parker into his worst impulses. We could just do a Peter Parker podcast. I could just talk about Peter Parker forever. The new Spider-Man movie I've seen three times, Ian. It is excellent. What were we talking about? Was it hockey?
Inside the locker room. Yeah, I can go through that. So I had the joy of listening to the entire video of all the players talking about you know, what they thought and what they were discussing inside the locker room. And it seemed like the general thing was, man, the forwards are really just playing really crappy defense. You know, a lot of times when you play hockey, and I've been told this by Alan May as an earlier blogger in my life, and it's something that now I play a lot of hockey about. I play a lot of hockey, and you start to notice these things. Is a lot of times the person who has the breakdown isn't necessarily at fault. And I think a lot of times when people will see, you know, Dmitry Orlov get walked or something else happen, you know, they'll be like, oh, it's his fault, this and that. A lot of times the Capitals just really struggle with team defense and with their forwards. So TJ Oshie went on and on about that a little bit after the game. And he was talking about how, you know, a lot of guys, you know, they're playing this like old timey game where he's kind of joking where, you know, if one guy has his man, then they're playing good defense. But, you know, it's not as simple as that. You know, play good team defense. You know, if someone has a breakdown, you need to help out and things like that. And John Carlson kind of pointed at a hodgepodge of mistakes and how it seems like when they fix one thing, something else gets worse and it just kind of goes into chaos. He also said that their slow starts were pretty bad. He also kind of said something that made me think of Andrei Burakovsky and Verana sometimes. And especially Evgeny Kuznetsov, he kind of pointed at how like, guys are overpassing. They're not dumping the puck in. You know, me and Peter will go on and on about how like dumping the puck in is, you know, if you carry the puck in, you're more likely to score a goal than to dump it in and chase. But he was basically talking about how the team's overpassing and not working hard in the corners and wearing teams out. And it kind of seemed like a broader criticism of Kuzi a little bit. And then Ovi was just like, oh, we just need to win. And once we win, we'll really get past this. So, you know, I think Braden Holtby also pointed to, you know, the team's effort is a little off. You know, they're looking back at last year. They're Stanley Cup champions, but this is a new year. And, you know, they have to redouble their efforts and really focus on this year instead of feeling good about last year.
The point you make about how like forwards bear responsibility for like the defensive success of a team is so important. And I've learned more kind of perversely from studying like esports, which I know is like a silly curiosity, but like I've learned more about like this game where you don't have some like the narrative stuff available. You just have sort of like a strategy and mechanics and performance and people working well together. And what you said about like the person that bears the responsibility isn't always the person that caused it. And, you know, we saw like Brooks Orpik be the one in a 2-on-1 mm-hmm. that ended up being a goal against. And obviously, like, you know, maybe like a defenseman can sometimes shut that down and get the puck loose, but it's not Orpik's fault that he got stuck in the 2-on-1. It's the other four guys ahead of him that, you know, gave the puck up and didn't get back in time. And Kuznetsov, as we've seen with his, you know, issues with the forecheck and not really being involved in board battles, you know, gets a lot of responsibility for that. When I think about in esports, for example, when you get to certain there's a chess word called Elo. It's used in a bunch of different sports, but like a different like skill tier. In order, and the NHL being like the highest tier possible for hockey, it's really hard to do something successfully unless it comes at the same time as your opponent making a mistake. And so the game becomes, can you be the last person to make a mistake? And can you exploit your opponent's mistake? And I think the Capitals are just doing way too much of one of those two things lately. That said, this article will be up on the website on Monday, but I'm not really despairing about it at all.
No,
and I know you're not either. I think this is, first of all, we're a spoiled team. I mean, like if you look, I pulled up the numbers. The last decade, the only team to win more regular season games than the Washington Capitals is the Pittsburgh Penguins, and
I didn't even know that.
A decade of being the best team. If you go back a few more years, it's like San Jose and Boston are up there too, and Chicago, and then Detroit if you go a little bit further. But like, yeah, and without a doubt, the Capitals are, you know, a top five team. And you know, if you want to go back as far as like 15 years, so it's been a good run, and it's not over yet. So I'm not freaking out about it. I think honestly, I know this is not what people want to hear, but most of this comes down to all the stuff that's been so excellent for the Capitals, not just for this year, but for the last few years, just went bad at the same time pretty strongly. So the Caps were shooting like 10, 15% during even strength for a big stretch of the season. And your average is like 8. And all of a sudden the Caps are shooting 5 during 5-on-5. And it's the defenseman scoring. And at the same time, the Capitals, who have been saving pretty much right around 93% on the goalies all season, and not so much last season, but for the previous seasons as well, for the last 5 games, they've saved 85%, which means the opponent puts 7 shots on goal and one of those goes in. That's just, and that's not a reflection of those players' talent levels. If it was, none of them would be in the league. I mean, like 5% is like John Erskine level shooting, and 85% goalie is probably doesn't make it in the AHL. So I'm not stressing about this. I think there's tons. I think what the streak does, what the slump does, is it gives them an opportunity to address the things that are revealed as a result of losing that sort of padding that the team got, which it's probably an intrinsic trait. Like, right? They're going to stay a high shooting, high saving team because they've got Braden Holtby and Alex Ovechkin and Evgeny Kuznetsov, even if he's not the one, you know, scoring goals. So I think those things will come back. I think they're still going to be an above average, you know, like PDO team, meaning like they score more goals than they're expected to score. But they've got this opportunity to say, what's going wrong with Matt Niskanen, right? This guy who's supposed to be the rock of the defense. Why is that not happening? What can we do to get Evgeny Kuznetsov going in two directions? One, he's like 1-for-66 on shooting, right? One goal at 5-on-5 for 66 shots. That's bonkers. Second, why is he allowing so many high danger chances? Why is the defensive end of the ice so bad when Evgeny Kuznetsov's on it? I think that there are uncomplicated answers to that, but they're answers that aren't easily resolvable just through, you know, spreadsheets. I think it's going to take a lot of video and systems play and motivational talking and frank conversations about what the responsibilities are with the systems underneath Todd Reirden with respect to a forward like Evgeny Kuznetsov, who can't coast like he did the first few months of the season on everyone else on his line scoring and the amazing power play production. Those two things are gone. So what's Kuznetsov going to be now? And no one doubts that he's amazing when he's in the offensive zone, but he's not always there. He's there less and less. So what do we do with that? And last, and I think this one's becoming more apparent with time, Brooks Orpik's on his last legs here. I know that sucks to say. He just played his 20th game of the season. He got his $250,000 bonus. He just played his 1,000th game. He scored a goal. He's got more even strength goals than Evgeny Kuznetsov. But without Christian Juice at his flank, he's not pulling up his part of the ice. And those are three. I mean, Lars Eller is also having a lot of problems, I think, especially recently, which is surprising to me because he's been so dependable. He's easily the best, you know, third line center this team's ever had. I can't ever think of a better third line center than Lars Eller, assuming that we count Fedorov as a second line center, which I do. So, yeah, I think that we have this cool opportunity. The Capitals have this cool opportunity to say, let's take, you know, these two games, these really tough ass back to back games against San Jose and Toronto before the break. Let's, you know, fix these things. Let's take our time and unpack what we need to unpack. Let's give our players some rest and come back for the home stretch and maybe make a trade or something. But I'm not worried. But yeah, the team's got some trouble.
Yeah, one thing that I've kind of thought more and more is that, wow, I think people should really think about how important Christian Juice is. And I think without him, they're really missing that steady guy that brings people up on the third defense pairing. And you see the weaknesses of Orpik, who has played very well when he's been paired with a fast, young, good defenseman. And I think Bally now is kind of going into chaos. I think he's lost some confidence. And then, you know, if Orpik can't bring him up, it's kind of that pairing's in chaos. And I think a lot of the forwards who are struggling with defense, you know, it's putting those defenders in chaos because those guys are making mistakes. And then the defenders are trying to do too much. You know, you have Holtby probably being a little bit too aggressive on some plays. I think it just kind of was like a big Jenga where someone pulled a piece out and then the whole team is crashing. You know what I mean? That's kind of how it feels. And like you said, is that I think this is a great period of time of reflection because they don't have that many problems. And this is actually going to make them solve some of these things. You know, Kuznetsov has not been bad since he returned from a concussion. He's been bad all year. And I think if you look at his dashboard stats, yes, he's close to averaging a point per game. He was putting up a ton of points in the beginning of the year. But, you know, when Peter did his analysis and other analysts have looked closer at his game and his 5-on-5 play, and he's been getting dominated defensively. And what is going on there? Something is going on there. Is it because he's too picky with scoring chances and high danger chances where he's trying to look for a perfect slam dunk goal instead of putting more volume on net, and these plays kind of push him behind the net and he's late coming back? Is he not hustling? Is he not is he not playing physical enough? Is he, you know, is there an effort issue here? You know, some of these things are in this self-examination is going to help them down the stretch. And, you know, for a team that almost never has issues or problems, I mean, this team has Tom Wilson missed, you know, almost 20 games in the beginning of the year. And I remember when he came back, there was the feel to Capitals games was different. There was an effort of physicality. And the thing that I felt when I watched this Blackhawks game is that the Caps really cared. And I hadn't been feeling that the last, you know, week or so. So I don't think this is the worst thing in the world. I'm really disappointed about a lot of fans on social media, even some of the commenters. You know, I love the team and I get the frustration. I get the panic somewhat, but, you know, they're coming off a Stanley Cup winning season. They have clearly shown that they're a good team. You know, this is just a bad stretch. I don't understand a lot of the you know, some people were calling for Reardon to get fired. I mean, he's been great. That really kind of concerned me just from a guy looking over the Caps fanhood. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, and the Reardon stuff came out of left field for me. I think maybe what it is that you and I and I don't want to like presume what like our the commentariat are like, but we've seen this team be terrible and we kind of liked it. I don't know. Like I'm fond of like the Chris Clark, Brian Pothier years, you know, like, but seeing how high they climbed over these last, you know, 4 years at least, and especially last summer, it's tough to see them, you know, be mortal again. Like,
are you saying heavy is the head that wears the crown?
I'm saying the hangover is tough sometimes, but yeah, I mean, like, I don't agree, but I don't agree. It's like the level of, I don't know, vitriol negativity about it.
Yeah.
But that said, that like, I know I was using like the PDO excuse, but that excuse doesn't work for that Islanders game. That was the worst I've seen this team play in an extremely long time. I mean, there was just
what was behind that.
Yeah, that's a good question, and I would be a lot smarter if I could answer it well. I just think they sucked. I don't know. It's so hard.
You know, watching that game, there was a little bit of like the sensei teaching his student.
Oh, I hate. I know you're. I know. I don't want to like. God damn it. I think you might be right, but I don't know.
but looking at that game, especially the third period, the Islanders just sat back, you know, waiting for the Capitals to attack. And then the two goals they scored were basically just turnovers that the Capitals made that they buried. I mean, Cal Clutterbuck on a breakaway, get out. Get out of town, Cal Clutterbuck. So, I mean, I don't know. It's one of those things where the narrative was, it felt a little true, but they did look terrible. And I think, you know, Trotz knows what the Capitals can't handle, you know?
Yeah, and I think he's got a faster team, a younger team with New York. And I think he probably hates it. you know, like how they play, and I'm sure he's happy about the record.
By the way, really quick, you were talking about PDO. Do you think the Islanders are a PDO team?
That's what I wanted to talk about. So in October, I was an Islanders doubter. And it is January, and they lead the Metro. And I am now an Islanders doubter. I'm still a doubter. I don't believe it. It will be April 4th, and the regular season will be over, and they're going to be right behind Tampa Bay for the President's Trophy. I'm going to go, I don't think so. And then it's going to be June 1st, and they're going to be in the Stanley Cup final against, I don't know, let's just say the Anaheim Ducks, because that's how the rest of the season is going to go. And I'm like, I don't think so. Paper Tiger, Anaheim, they're deep. They're going to go all the way. No, they're really not. I mean, like, it's the classic, like, Colorado Avalanche 2014 or Minnesota Wild 2012 thing, like Toronto in 2013. Like, there's these teams that just don't, that just, they're absolutely successful, and they're fun as hell to watch because they score goals in clutch ways. And I don't want to take away from that.
You should take away from it.
Well, in the moment, experientially, it's freaking a blast.
Yeah.
But it's not a sustainable way to build a successful team. I don't know. It's enjoy the ride while you've got it.
You know,
even if regression comes, it's not going to come fast enough for them to miss the playoffs. So
that's true.
And honestly, they probably want to miss the playoffs. I mean, I'm sure they're. It's a huge like puff up for the team, and it's, you know, good like losing Tavares and making the playoffs and all that stuff, but it's also brutal for that team that really needs like a top pick. You know, if they were slotted to be what, bottom five in the league, they were going to be in the Jack Hughes lottery, and now they could be competing for Ottawa for like that, you know, just missed the playoffs garbage pick.
Yeah,
bundle. And that would be really problematic for Lou if he's still even the GM at that time, because he's like 70,000 years old.
I'm gonna ask you a question: who is their starting goaltender?
Grice,
I think, right?
Yeah, it's Grice. It's Thomas Grice.
They have the fourth highest save percentage, 5-on-5. The Islanders do.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't believe in that. I just, like, that's, no. I'm just a no. I'm a no
all
on
right,
it.
All right, let's do it. Let's do some statistical stuff real quick. So I'm going to go to CorsicaHockey.com, Manny's website, right? And I'm going to go to player stats. I'm going to choose Goldies. Goldies is what my soccer coach used to call them. And I'm going to find Grice in here. So, Grice. Nope, it's spelled the other way. Nope, it's spelled the other way.
E before I, except before G. Or okay. After G. Or
alrighty.
Whatever.
So, Grice. Okay, so his expected save percentage based on like the quality of shots that he faces is 91.9, which is pretty good. That means that they do a pretty decent job of like limiting quality, but he's saving 93.3, which only really so like he's definitely above. If you like measure by like the gap between the two, the worst goal in the league would be, hold your breath for it, Michael Neuvirth. the Colin Dillia guy that you know, whipped the Caps' ass today is up there. But
Did he really?
No, he didn't. He gave up 5
goals. He couldn't stop a point shot, but he could make backward saves with his back jumping. That was the dumbest goalie performance I've ever seen in my life. Like,
yeah.
Brooks Orpik squeaker from beyond the circles. Can't stop it.
I like that Brooks Orpik shot. Like, it was very simple. It was to the stick side. It was good.
It was smart. Yeah, it was smart. But still, I mean, I'm not a believer in Colin Dillia.
It looks like Grice is right behind Anaheim's John Gibson, who was like, you know, until Anaheim had that horrible losing streak, was really like carrying their asses out of the basement.
And
so, yeah, Grice
is
super
good.
Hot.
And yes. Grice isn't bad, don't get me wrong, but he's not that good. I mean, that's just bonkers.
Yeah. They're gonna collapse. It'll be in like the first round of the playoffs, though. So like, where's the fun of that, right? Like, the Caps have done that 40,000 times. Can I ask you your thoughts on Devontae Smith-Pelly's appearance at the in the game today? I don't want to talk about his performance of the game. Let's go ahead.
I thought that was one of the coolest things. So what happened was is that Pierre McGuire said that before the game or a few days before the game, TJ Oshie approached Todd Reirden and said that I want DSP to start in my place on the opening faceoff. They wanted him out for the national anthem. So today marked almost a year since Devontae Smith-Pelly face racist taunts in the penalty box last year from four Blackhawks fans who eventually were banned from the arena. And I thought that was just such a poignant, beautiful thing. And it wasn't even, you know, yeah, they showed love and respect to their teammate, but I think even broader, I just thought that was just such a beautiful humanity thing. And I loved it.
Yeah, it's like in Rudy, where all the players put their, like, you know, jerseys on the table, and they're like, Rudy plays. Except in real life, it actually happened, because it didn't. The Rudy thing didn't actually happen. But, you know, it's a great thing for Carlson and Oshie to do, to like step up at that moment. And everybody in DC knows, really, even since like the moment the dude came to town, that Smith-Pelly is such a solid guy. He kicks ass on the charity front. I know, like, the Caps and the NHL in general are all about like community activity and charity stuff. Smith-Pelly goes above and beyond, as we saw with the Metropolitan, the Metro Maple Leafs, you know, last week. And to have him be the one that got the basketball chant last year, which was so infuriating, like, I'm still angry about it right now. I'm laughing to cover up my emotional potency here, but I was very proud to see him out there taking that first drop, getting his name called out. And I'm glad that everything went much better this time around in Chicago, aside from getting their asses destroyed.
Yeah, and that was bigger than sports. And one thing that disappointed me too was there were some fans, some Capitals fans, in the comments of that article that we wrote, you know, talking about Reardon getting fired, and this was a terrible move, and the Caps are playing bad, and this and that.
Oh yeah, the guy that thought the Caps lost because Devontae Smith-Pelly played the first 20 seconds of the game instead of like the fourth 20 seconds of the game. Like, are you
all right?
This is crazy. But you know, I think that's the type of stuff I want to see from my Washington Capitals team, not the fact that they're accepting a Donald Trump invite to the White House. But so, yeah. Sorry, I murmured there. I'm sorry.
It's okay. We're getting a little political. Was Devontae Smith-Pelly okay today? I've got the stat sheet right in front of me.
Yeah,
here.
Was he?
One goal against.
Bro had an even rating. So yeah, everyone else was in the toilet. He had an even rating. Devontae Smith-Pelly, best player on the ice today.
Really?
That's so awesome. Stipulated. I've just decided, yes.
All right, let's go with it.
Did anybody have a positive? Yes. Nikki Backstrom, solid. The top line, Ovi did. Dmitry Orlov somehow got an even rating. Oh, got a positive rating. Kuzi, negative three.
Wait, how was his shot attempts numbers, Kuzi's?
Oh, I haven't looked in a little bit, but I was like it was in the 30s or 20s. So like for the listeners who aren't me and Ian, you want to take more shot attempts when you're on the ice than your opponent does, right? You want to be in the offensive zone more than you're in the defensive zone. So above 50 means that. And that was me just talking to Pat so I could look it up real quick. And the answer is 43.5%. So the Caps took 10 shot attempts and the Blackhawks took 13 during Kuznetsov shifts. That was the third worst on the team, with Kempney and Niskanen being the worst. Kempney and Niskanen being the worst is really interesting because they're not paired together. Did they switch up defensive pairings in this game?
I don't even know. I didn't notice it if they did. I think Carlson and Orlov were on the ice together a few times.
That's really interesting. I mean, like, that was one of the things that I made it like a joke about it during the game, that they should switch dudes up to split up Orlov and Niskanen.
There was so much chaos going on that, you know, it's like every time I was watching play, there was another goal. There was something else happened. Ovi tried to murder Kane because Kane tickled his pickle. So I don't know.
Are you proud of that? Are you proud of that line you just did there?
No, that was bad. That was bad. I was thinking back to the picklebacks.
All right, I'm now gonna pull up. I mean, this is a fun podcast of people listening to Peter pulling up stats on the internet. But so yes, Niskanen and Kempney were paired together for 14 minutes.
Huh?
And,
wow.
And they got caved in. They were 26% together. So that's interesting. So the it looks like maybe Orlov. So what did Orlov do well?
Did Orlov get promoted, or did Kempney get promoted?
I think that the difference is really meek, is really modest between that those two pairings.
Well, I'm not saying statistically. I'm saying in Todd Reardon's mind.
Oh. That's a good question. I don't know. Although, so Carlson Orlov, yeah, they outshot the opponents 25-16.
Wow.
That's more than 60%. That's a dominating game.
Wow.
So, yeah, and that's kind of what we've been fearing has been the thing all along, that like Niskanen's been, and that sucks to say though, because Niskanen's been so good for 4 years. And he was, and like I said this earlier, but like, I didn't have any appreciation for it when he came to town.
I just didn't.
He just seemed so low key that unless you were like diving deep into the numbers, I don't think you saw it. I mean, he had like fine like gap control, but like not a fast skater, a decent passer, but like, and he's like Olsner at Olsner's best. When Olsner could really skate, he was just really good at marking a guy so that he's not effective on the attack, right? Like you're back checking and the guys, you can't do anything against him. I guess he's got a clean outlet pass, but. Low-key player. I love him.
Remember when we were a little concerned when they signed him because a lot of the hype that he got from Pittsburgh was he scored a lot of goals in their power play.
Yeah. Yeah. And I honestly, I think it was like the Orpik thing. Like they thought they were signed like an hour and 15 minutes apart from each other. And you're like, what just happened here? like we got a whole lot of Pittsburghers in Washington. We want to Stanley Cup with them now. What does that mean? I don't know what to make of it. What else?
I don't even know.
Real quick, because this is one of those things that is like, I'm sure this is like a something that people are concerned about elsewhere. But you and I are like, yeah. And Alex Ovechkin is not playing in the All-Star game.
Oh yeah, that's true.
So what? Right?
Yeah, I don't know. Like you know. Actually, I have a take. I have a take, and it's not really about Alex Ovechkin. I think the NHL could learn a lot from the KHL about how they do their festivities.
How does the KHL do their festivities?
So on Saturday, you probably saw that we wrote a post about some weird Canadian dude singing the Hey Ho song that the Lumineers do.
Yeah, that song is trash, by the way.
I like it. But, you know, that's the type of stuff that the NHL really should be doing is showing off the players' personalities and talent and having fun. I think, you know, they used to do like the goaltender races where the guys would race, you know, just like the forwards, and that was hilarious. And
yeah,
it seems like they've taken more and more personality out of the game. You know, like I think Ovi became one of the most popular players ever because of his breakaway challenge stuff. And it just seems, everything just seems so contrived. It seems like no one wants to go there. I think the 3-on-3 setup for the All-Star game, while maybe more entertaining, it just sucks in general. Like, I can't get excited about the Metropolitan Division All-Stars. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I feel no connection to the other Metro guys.
Yeah.
In fact, I hate them all. I don't want to root for them. I hate Crosby. I hate all these guys, you know.
Like the best moments that I can think of in like All-Star game history, one has to be Ovi not wanting to be picked so he can get the car.
Oh yeah.
and then Kessel being the last one picked. And yeah. then Kessel like leaving his team, going to Pittsburgh, being the best player in those playoffs, winning a Stanley Cup, and then just you're bringing that thing to just being an American champion, not going to the Olympics, being a sassy boy. Kessler's a superstar. I love him. And John Scott from a couple years ago, which is like a different thing, but like dude scored two goals. I don't know if he scored two goals in his last two seasons in the NHL. Like,
that,
you know,
that was like John Scott winning the All-Star game MVP was like Daniel Bryan in wrestling winning the championship at WrestleMania 30. And the reason why they're similar is because that was an FU to the person that people feel control the sport. And
yeah,
for fans, that was an FU to Bettman for not letting the All-Star game be fun. And then, you know, same thing with John Scott, you know, so, or I guess Daniel Bryan with Vince McMahon. I think that's the thing, is that I don't really care at all. And I should care. I feel like I should care, but I don't. Like,
no one cares about the game, but you can care about the personalities involved in the game if you get any access to them. But I guess, like, I don't know if it's like it's probably the culture around it. But I don't want to like invoke like esports, but you just did wrestling, so I get to. But like in esports, these poor guys, unlike in like the Overwatch League, they do like an hour of just like finger quotes, content a day, where they're like, all right, we're going to cut a video, we're going to throw it up on YouTube, we're going to throw this up on Twitter, this is going to be a Twitch stream thing. Like, they're not just playing this game so that people can watch people play this game. They're playing this game so that people can, you know, get in like emotionally invested. All the stuff that we care a whole lot about at like Russian Machine, where like these aren't just games. We love the games. We love the sport. I love the sound of it, right? Like these games are fun. If they weren't fun, we wouldn't be involved. But once we are involved and we invest all that time, we can't help but get attached to these personalities, these people. Mm-hmm. We know their struggles. We know their triumphs. And that's a huge part of the appeal of the game. And there's just not a lot of vectors between fans and those personalities. And the All-Star game's an opportunity for that they don't exploit.
And after the John Scott thing happened, the way they kind of switched up voting, I don't even really understand how players end up in the All-Star game anymore. It's so complicated.
Yeah.
It's just not fun. And I think if the NHL was to actually examine how to fix the All-Star game, it'd be less about the game itself and it'd be about everything else. And I think even when they did the draft got so tired so fast because, again, they tried to make moments instead of the moments naturally happening. I think that Ovechkin Carr thing, you know, I think that might have been a few too many drinks that night. And
yeah,
but they turned it into an amazing thing. So, you know, I don't know. It's just, that's what I want to see from an All-Star game. And it's just left wanting. And so that's why when I look at the KHL stuff where the guys are dressed up like the three or four Musketeers for some reason, somebody's wearing big inflatable pants, some guy's singing an acoustic set. I mean, if imagine Braden Holtby just being like, you know what, I'm just going to sing some Jack Johnson during the All-Star game. It would bring the house down. And not only that, it would make him a superstar forever. You know what I mean? Like, he would become memorable, you know, beyond the save. Yeah.
But he's not going to do Jack Johnson. He's going to do What I Got from Sublime. And then he's going to go, I can play the guitar like an MF, right? And then that awful, like, just the least, like, it's just like, it's just like the, it's, I just picked up my ukulele to do that. Like, I don't know, Braden Holtby knows like six songs. Three of them are Jack Johnson. Two of them are Sublime. And then the last one is, Wonderwall.
Like,
I don't want to watch that.
Listen, imagine if they're going out to California, the NHL just gives a boatload of cash to the Caps Russians, and they do a Family Feud segment.
That's a great idea.
These things, it's so easy. Like, NHL, hire me. Let me do this for you.
But that's got to be negotiated in the game. That's got to be negotiated in the CBA.
You know, that's a good point, too.
And it absolutely should be something that the NHL should endeavor for, because it's a huge opportunity that's wasted. But it's something that actually has to be, like, they have to give up something to get that from the players, or else they're asking time of the players that they're just not entitled through the contract. But it should be something that should get, you know, readjusted, and the capital should, the players should be, you know, reimbursed for it. But it'd be a better product, a better fan experience if they had it.
I know, like, when they talk about the World Cup of Hockey, I am like, I don't give an F. But if they would actually do constructive things like this where they showed more who the players are and let people in more, and it felt more real. You know, I feel like there's a certain authenticity that's been missing too with a lot of this stuff. You know, when Ovechkin first came into the league, he didn't know very much English and he was just having fun with it. And even though you didn't really understand a lot what he was saying, or a lot of it was stupid, like, I want girls, you know, I love girls. What you gleaned from that was that this guy is a happy, fun individual. He wants to be here. He has a passion for life. And people fell in love with that, because you just want to be surrounded by that enthusiasm and that happiness. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't any big thing. He was just himself. So, you know, so when we talk about the All-Star game and Ovi skipping it, I don't really get deep feelings about that. The only thing I do really consider is, you know, looking back at his legendary career, you know, he's not going to be up there in All-Star game stats, which really doesn't matter. But, you know, and B, you know, it's just, it's not, is it really going to feel like an All-Star game if Ovi and McDavid and Sidney Crosby aren't all going to be there? You know, it's just, there's just a type, it just doesn't feel as important.
Wait, is McDavid not going either?
No, I'm just saying, like, if all those top players aren't there, is it really an all-star game?
No. When you said you don't give an F about the World Cup of Hockey, it's a really good thing because they're never, ever doing that again. It's never happening again.
No, it's going to happen again. It's going
to
happen again.
They're already not going to do it in 2020. Everyone knows that they're going to, that the NHL is going to China for the Olympics, right? It, not to, like, you know, get too, I don't know, inside baseball for the podcast here, but, like, the World Cup of Hockey as like a business project for the NHL was just saying, we don't need the IIHF and the Olympics. We can do this on our own. And they put up a thing that, like, I don't know. I thought Team North America was interesting. I hated the rest of it, but it was the same as like what, you know, like the Monumental Sports did when they like started up like their, you know, like Monumental Sports Entertainment as like a network, as like an alternative, like a over the top, direct station rather than being like a cable thing. And they did it as, you know, a competitor to Comcast, what's now NBC Sports Washington. But at the time, it was just sort of like it gave them leverage to, you know, purchase an interest, a pretty sizable interest in NBC Sports Washington as a regional sports network. Whether the project itself was ever going to go forward or not, I imagine it was, you know, dual purpose, one for leverage in the negotiations and one to be like a viable backup plan. But, you know, no one ever took the World Series of Hockey seriously. And if we see it again in 10 years, I'll be surprised.
Really? I really think they'd want to make it a regular event, but
it's a CBA stunt. And the NHL, like the ownership management, not the management, but the owners and Gary Bettman are all just trying to position what their argumentation is for hockey related revenue next time around. And if they give up the Olympics to gain, 5% of hockey related revenue, that's an easy negotiation. As long as they get, some allowances for like insurance or something like that.
Do you remember how much each player who played in the World Cup of Hockey made?
I do not.
$80,000.
$80,000?
That's all they got.
This league is such a scam, man. Like professional sports as a business is, maybe our current political situation has me more aware of, shady business practices than I used to be. But we'll have $80,000 for, a week and a half long tournament.
Players? to me, that's a lot of money.
Yes, let's not get ourselves.
I would consider selling an organ for $80,000, but for these players, that's like $5.
We have to sort of get, we have to like start getting ourselves in the mind of being like economically interested. And because like another CBA negotiation is coming up later this year, there's like the opt-out period, right? Like
it's 2020, I think September 2020. But if things start going south over the summer, yeah, of course.
So either the PA or the ownership can indicate that they want to opt out in 2019, which would take effect in 2020. So like the clock starts ticking if either organization chooses to opt out. And it looks like the players are more interested in doing so because of escrow, which I still don't totally understand as an argumentation point. I'll have to do some more research on so I can argue with Alabama about it. But like 2020 is the year that everyone's like worried about stuff happening. But it also could happen in 2022. If neither of them expresses the interest in opting out, then I think the CBA goes all the way to 2022. But we'll see what happens. Ian, is there anything else you want to hit, or should we let the good people get on with their days?
I don't think so. Hopefully everybody's been enjoying all the work we've been doing, and I think the site, just to talk about the site a little bit, I think we've been having great content, and God, I sound like such a editor or something.
No, it's good. I'll talk about the things that suck in a second, which will be ads and comments.
Oh yeah. But yeah, I hopefully people have noticed we're trying to go into a more sustainable higher gear, and by that is I've been in conversations with some of the people, some of the writers, about how do we share some of the load and still cover things as passionately. And I've been really impressed by the additions of Julia this year and Brennan, and they've been really kicking butt. And I really love the fact that our staff is so diverse. It could be more diverse someday, and that would be really cool. But I just, we have so many different voices, and everybody's so smart, and I feel like we're so well-rounded. This is the most proud I've ever been of the site,
I agree entirely. Amen. And then I'll just say that the ads are driving both of us insane.
Yeah. Oh God, no, can we talk about that? I think we should talk about it.
Listener, if you have, especially on a phone, if you've like clicked on the website and you've gotten like a takeover ad that like takes you like sort of like it's sometimes like an Amazon thing, but it's not always. It sucks so hard. And like basically our solution to it is send a ticket to like the ad provider, which they'll not really do anything about for an amount of time, or turn off ads altogether. So we've been just doing the latter. We've just been like sucking away all revenue from like page views because it sucks so bad to get these ads. And we're both, Ian, you work in like email marketing, you're conscious of these sorts of issues, and I work in technology too, and it blows so hard to see something that doesn't have to be corrupt and evil be corrupt and evil, especially on our innocent little platform.
Yeah, and it's just the fact too that it was something that happened once or twice. You understand that it's going to happen every now and then for a few users, but it has just sometimes it just takes over so many different people in the area. It is so frustrating. And I think what I want people to know is we're definitely taking the hit when we know it's happening. We're looking into other avenues to fix this. We're actually in a really great development area right now where we're kind of trying to solve a few problems, maybe not problems, but we're trying to make the site a little bit better for people on mobile, since about 60 or 70% of our traffic is from mobile, which is insane. If you would have asked me that 5 or 6 years ago. So we've been reevaluating everything. It's, I think that's the thing that makes us so good in a sense, is that, you know, Peter, I was talking about this with a friend, is that both of us are in technology and we don't really get left behind. You know what I mean? Like, because we're constantly being hit with this stuff in our own day jobs, we always are wanting to push the site and make it better. And, you know, stuff like this is just incredibly frustrating, but, we're going to figure out a different methodology, because I think that, you know, that monetary resources is decent, but is there a way that we can replace that with something even better that isn't a pain in the butt?
I want every person to just do the $1 Patreon.
Yeah.
And then turn on ad block, because I promise that's more than you'll ever. I mean, most people listen are gonna be like Patreon people anyway, but like it's way more money than we'll ever make from your ad views. You'd have to visit the site like 1,000 times a month.
You know what, Peter? You know what? Should we write about that?
Ben brought that up earlier, and I should definitely. I'll put something on Patreon to start with.
Okay,
but it's something we should bring broad. And I totally agree. Yeah,
I think we should before the playoffs. I think we should announce that we'll stop doing ads if.
That's a good idea. I like that idea. All right, let's talk about
another thing. There's another thing we could do too, and not to talk inside baseball about the site, but we could also do internal marketing with that ad space, and I bet we'd make more money, or I think it would be possible that we'd make even more money from just doing that.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I think that'd be fine. That one, you know, I had that one ad thing on there, and it was fine. Then Chris was like, you know, this destroys performance. I was like, no, I did not know that. Thank you, Chris, for telling me that.
What was he saying about how like it takes a while to load? Or?
Yeah, it added like 3 seconds to the load time of the site. So a good lesson learned, and that's why I appreciate that we've got smarter people than us.
You know, even more inside baseball, what is the thing that the website pops up in AMP? Okay, so we're also trying to make... Okay, so when we initially went live with our new website in the Stanley Cup Finals, if everybody remembers our database issues where... God, we sound like such a problem child.
Really?
So when the Lightning... when the Capitals beat the Lightning Eastern Conference Finals and our website went down so we could only post like one or two things after the game, that led me to meeting Ovi that night, which was awesome. But it also caused us not to sleep for about 2 weeks. And when we got the new website up, we had a function called AMP. And basically what AMP does is it simplifies the website so that when people click on us, if they have like, I don't really know completely why it pops up, but I think it's because if your computer senses that you can't really handle a hard load of the site, it'll give you AMP to go quicker. And so, anyways, AMP was popping up for people, but it wasn't showing GIFs or GIFs or tweet embeds or stuff like that. So we turned it off so that AMP redirected to just the main website if it ever detected for someone, which was fine. But then Google came out with something recently. Man, I'm getting really in the weeds with this.
Is the mobile first indexing?
Yeah, where the mobile first indexing, and it detected that we were redirecting the AMP. So we're looking into that too. But that's another thing that'll help people's experience if we figure out how to get tweets and other embeds to work in this code like foundry. So that's another fun thing. But those are the types of things that we're looking into on top of writing all the time. And I'm a dad too, and have a full time job. And
I'm dog sitting.
So Peter's dog sitting. But those are kind of the things that we're working on. And you know what? I even think about the fact we haven't even had a party this year yet.
Nope. Yep. We got things in the works. The only thing I just want to add is that if people could stop telling me to die in the comments, I would appreciate that a whole bunch.
Oh yeah, that would be good. That'd be a real morale booster.
not gonna die. Nice try, pal. All right. I think that does it for the Rush Machine podcast.
Yeah, I think so. Well, everybody, feel better. The world isn't ending. The Capitals will win a game again. We're not just saying that. Things aren't as bad as they seem. And if one of your friends is really freaking out, just tell them to chill. And even if the Caps lose these next two games, when they come back from bye and the All-Star break, everybody's going to have a lot of different problems. And I really think, you know, everything's going to smooth itself out in February, maybe not March, but but February will be all right.
Is there an Alex Ovechkin quote that you could send us out on that could encompass your attitude about the Caps' potential for success going forward?
Yeah, I'm scratching my head, and we're not going to be sucked this year.
Have a good week, everybody.
This has been Russian Machine Never Breaks, the podcast. But now it's over. Nothing to see here. Move along.